have an agenda. It just got four items. Opening and welcome, tabling of provinces, negotiating mandate, departmental response, conclusion and way forward. Honorable Chani is in busy with other meeting as we're speaking now. He's chairing the meeting of the chairpersons and the whips. And Honorable Gunda will be leaving before the meeting again. some small amendment to the approach. Ask the department to be there.
Can I make a suggestion that, first of all, to thank the department for the work they've done, but then as we go clause by clause, let's do the negotiating at the same time. If the provinces agree with the recommendation, then so be it. But if we don't agree, then we recommend as provinces what we need to do.
Yeah, I think we are agreeing. Thank you very much. Can we be led by the department? Okay, I suggested that on two, when we do with the tabling, the department would lead us in terms of what are all those issues that are common to all the provinces, and also isolate those issues that are not common. Yes. Those issues that are not common, and also you will also dwell on the departmental responses. First of all, you need to confirm as whether all the negotiation mandates have reached the department.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members here of the committee. Good morning, everybody who is here. In response to direction from our Honorable Chairperson, what I can say here is that there were few issues where there was commonality among the provinces. One of those issues, and in doing this, Chairperson, I request that bear with us, and I would also call upon my colleagues to collaborate some of the things that I have found. In response to the first part, one of the issues where there was a consensus on the part of the provinces, that's commonality, was the issue of all members of National House to be full-time instead of only the chairperson and deputy chairperson. Quite a number of provinces touch on that, that view. If I heard you correctly, I want to say that the response from the department to that is that indeed clause 10, sub clause 2 of the National House of Transgender Deal makes provision for this to say that the president may designate certain or all the members of the National House to be full-time members if he is convinced that there is a need for that. That we can make this, clear that there is an option. It is open if the president is convinced that after discussion with the members concerned or the chairperson or the leadership of the House, that this can happen. So we said no amendment, really. So we can amend and to make it clearer. The second one, chairperson, involves recognition of the principal service manager. Again, quite a number, if not the majority of the provinces, were not in favor of this category of transgender leaders. departmental response to that was that the creation of this category is not compulsory. That the bill provides that where the community concerned can demonstrate clearly that its history, its laws, that is custom and customary laws, allow this for this kind of category. As was clearly stated to us, for instance, by transgender leaders coming from Free State. If there's a demonstration, clear demonstration to the satisfaction of investigators, satisfaction of the government, or wherever it's concerned, that indeed the history, customary law, and customs of that particular community allow for the creation of this category. So it's not an open situation where traditional leaders or traditional communities can take advantage of and apply for this. And so that we are opening a floodgate to this. This is not the case. And that was the response of the department.
Are we talking to this topic? Because I've now lost
I thought everyone has got a document.
Yes, but are we talking about
the
it's very confusing, Chairperson.
Yes.
I noted the honorable first up there.
Can I just make a suggestion? What we did is we analyzed each province's inputs we received to negotiate per province. And where there were commonalities, we cross-referenced that the other provinces had the same comments or dealt with the same issue. I'd like to suggest, therefore, that we go through this document page by page.
This one?
Yes, this document, the 35-page document.
Yes.
Yes. Page by page. And then at each issue, the provinces, like the first one made by Free State, where they propose to make an amendment, whether then the committee indicates whether they agree with the proposal for the department or don't agree. I'd like to suggest that we use that method.
Yeah, but the department is not wrong, because I indicated this, that if there is no amendment, can the department raise issues of common, you know, those issues that are common, can the department raise them and isolate that those that are not common so that we are able to respond? That's how we have suggested. And now it looks like everyone is confused.
Yes.
Yep.
Chairperson, I think if that was the angle that the department wanted to take, they would have prepared to that effect, so that they can give us that summary and give that to us so that we can work through it. Because right now we're trying to page through from one page to another page, trying to find whatever. It's becoming very confusing. We've got to look at what the mandate that we have so that we are sure on what we're agreeing upon. I mean, there's an issue, no amendment. We're moving on, no amendment. No, this and that. We must be very clear what we're talking about. And if there is such a summary, let us get that summary. Let's look at it. Of those common issues, where there are consensus on issues, then we can then begin to move forward. But if not, I would suggest we move along this document so that we know what we're talking about. Because right now, I mean, if the department is not prepared for that, they did not prepare that summary, I mean, there might be some problems. Because this is what somebody thinks, and this is not what they have applied their mind properly on.
Noted. Clear, yes.
Chairperson, I think I think we understand your guidance. It is very clear. We concur with you. The only thing is that when the department talk, when the officials talk to this document, if they can tell us the pages, if they can refer us to the pages, so that we get confused, we don't get confused. I thank you, Chairperson.
So if you can refer to that, because there's no difference. The only thing that we didn't say department was put them in writing when in terms of my approach. I thought we all understand that because we had a document. When we talk of principal establishments, we would know it is common or it's not common. That okay. If you can, okay, just before.
No, Chair, I think the second suggestion was that if we go that route, we must also then conclude on the issue that we're discussing so that we don't come back to it. You know? Yeah.
No problem with that. Let's just begin at the beginning.
Thank you, Chairperson. As my colleague has said, I don't want to, now we have said a lot of things, I'm not very clear. What we have, as my colleague has correctly stated, is this document, which reflects comments made by each province and also our responses at the department. Also in this document, we have indicated where the issue as identified by each province has already been dealt with. It is in this document. So if I don't know whether if I could be allowed, as was suggested earlier, if I could read it through this, you will see clearly that such as each province has said something and we've responded, and where the second province is repeating what already has been said by, we also indicate our response that we've already responded to that. So, with respect, Chairman, if I could read through, go through the document with honorable members, then that would be very clear. If we go fine.
Can I raise a point for clarity? You agree that you must take us through the whole. If I'm having a point of clarity, can I raise my hand and ask that point of clarity? On what?
I'm not sure if I understand you clearly. If it says it's taking us through the document, is it going to say, for example, in terms of the first point around all members being full-time, is it going to deal with all provinces on that specific issue so that we can then conclude? Then it goes to the second item, you know, the second point, because then that's going to assist us to deal with it speedily and conclude on it. Because if it goes to it that way, province, everything on one province and everything on the other province, it's going to cause us a lot of confusion.
That's why the earlier suggestion was raise issues that are common to all provinces. And I agree. If these provinces are confirming, can we proceed to those that are not the same? That's how I wanted the approach to go. The only thing that people were lost in terms of not understanding which page and which one to understand, that was the only thing which would request that no. All principal traditional leaders, the issue is only 0.4. Something like that. I think that will assist. So.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Again, using the document that I think is in for you, we start by stage one, comment by Free State, and we're saying this, that quite a number of provinces but did a comment on this. That is National House, or this on the National House of Transnational Bill. where they were saying that it's clause 10, sub clause 2. All members of the National House to be full time instead of only the chairperson and deputy chairperson, which is clause 10 of the PM. And a departmental comment was that the clause there concerned of the bill already provides that the president may designate certain members to be full time. And the department goes on to say that it is open to amending, further amending the bill to make it clearer that the president may designate certain or all members of the National House to be full-time when the president is satisfied that there is a need for that.
Yeah. Can we wait so that I do what the House wants us to do? Can we then comment on this one quickly?
Honorable, thank you very much, Chairperson. No, it's just clarity. I consulted with my colleague from the Free State. I really want to know the financial implications of such a move. It's clarity that I'm asking. What is the amount that we are talking about, monetary amount that we are talking about, if all these people will be full time? That is my question. It's a question of clarity. I'm not differing with the position that my government, but I'm interested to know what the financial implications of this move.
Is there any other clarity question? Because at the end of the day, there are financial implications in terms of the document.
I think it's a valid point, the point on the cost. But the thing that worries me is that virtually all the provinces ask that these members should be full-time. Now we're saying the president may. It's really, even if we make it a more of a sweetheart clause, it still doesn't say they will be full-time. Shouldn't there be some clause in there to say that on the recommendation of the National House of Constitutional Leaders, to make it stronger, because it, to me this doesn't really fulfill the request by the provinces. But I'm open to the House.
Honorable Martino?
Chair. Remember when we received an input from traditional leaders themselves and also members that are supposed to do certain work in the provinces themselves. It was very clear that because of resources, the department could not support them fully, you know, and therefore it was impossible for them to do a lot of work that they were supposed to do, you know, around dealing with problems of traditional leaders, conflicts that are there within those particular communities, and that's the reason why all provinces indicated that no, if these people can be full time, it's going to assist to make this work very simple and easy for them to can deal with all those situations. Because you see, the point that the department is putting up here might go to the same situation where you have, because if they say they can't afford all of them, I'm not sure what the number is now. But let us look at a specific number so that we know that this is not just a house, you know, that has been put there. It does not have, it can't do anything else because there are no resources. The department is not even supporting that particular house. Yes.
Any other for the department support? And maybe as a matter of principle, I think we should be fundamental and say we agree or not agree before other issues, so that we get the commonality first in terms of this. But what is that Free State is not against, just a clarity issue. cost implication emphasized by Watson, Honorable Watson, and the motivation from magic. Can I, without, you know, if I say you are agreeing, but then there are issues that must further be unpacked in terms of the cost.
Chair, I want to come in where Honorable Boom and Honorable Watson and my colleague on the other side is talking about the cost here. We, as what was the select committee on this issue, we mustn't create something or an expectation and we did not yet find out what's the cost of these things. We can create another problem for government if we can just say, full time, we don't know what's the cost, we don't know how many members will be full time, and all those things. We can get a lot of problems by that. I would suggest we can rephrase this thing and say, we will first let the department find out what was the cost, being how many members, and come, even if the department doesn't come back personally, just send the things to us on paper. We as the committee can then take it up from there. But just conclude and say, full time, and accept it and agree on this, we'll put another burden on government, on the taxpayers. And we can't allow something like that. We represent the people here. We really want the people to be served. We cannot just make suggestions or proposals that at the end of the day, it's going to come back to us and then we're going to have another problem. So my suggestion is, as well as the provinces want the people to be full-time, the department did not work out the cost. The department was asked to come and amend this thing and see and brought these things back to us so that we can negotiate the mandate from each province and all that. I suggest that the department can, we can go through this document today, it's fine. But the implications of this thing will hurt us very, very bad.
Thanks, Jefferson. Jefferson, now for the limitation, you must remember that I've been not part of the debate. But I'm just trying to think here in terms of the principle. Because as politicians inside here, if we are going to be driven by cost, and to be considering costs more than the strategy, then we're going to have a problem. Here we're supposed to be aligning our strategy into the budget. So we are not the people who are supposed to be thinking about the costs, here implications, and all this. I was listening to the Honorable Member there. Whilst I was listening, and then obviously I'm saying the limitation with me is that I was not there, I was not party, so I don't have enough information and I'm not read, I'm in that deep so that I can understand. The issue is that we want to make sure that the traditional leaders are effective in executing their duties. We want to ensure that we limit the conflicts that arise because of certain things or the other. And for that reason, there is this view that they must be full-time. If our strategy is to make sure that they are effective in executing their duties and ensuring that they deliver the necessary services to the people that they are serving, then what is supposed to be taking a position here is to say, if we're saying full-time, if we're saying all of them full-time, or 10 of them full-time, or 5 of them full-time, we're supposed to say that. And then the issue of cost must go, the department and government must work on the basis of the principle. I'm interested to know, who's going to tell us that these people are supposed to be full-time, or how many of them are supposed to be full-time? Isn't it the mandates that are coming from them, I mean from the traditional leaders themselves, isn't what we've heard from them that guides us in order to take a position. So that's why I'm interested in, I'm saying the limitation. I could have got a Congress proposal, but the main, my limitation is that I'm not well informed. But I'm worried when we're saying we are not sure how many of the massive return. Who is sure? That would be the question for me. So I'm trying to suggest that let us have a principle here in this house that we are proposing to the department, and the department can comment, and we conclude on that. We don't postpone our responsibility and give it to someone else whom we don't know who is that. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Roy.
Thank you, Chair. We are supporting. We are worried about what the Prof was saying now, to say they're going to amend to provide further clarity. We feel that the clause is definitive enough as is in the bill, Chair, because the clause says the President may designate certain members. And we think as is the clause, it's fine enough for now, Chair, to work with going forward. It does take care of the issues of cost, and if cost by then are available, and perhaps the numbers of traditional of the members are increased to 30 and 40. I don't know. I'm just saying, Chair, that as is, as the clause. As is now, it's fair enough in terms of what we are taking care of, which gives the present powers of assisting, and it gives the opportunity to the chiefs themselves, the members, to engage the department or engage the president, because they will also be meeting with the president from time to time. You know, so these are the methods of engagement, I think, Chair. For now, the clause is we're supporting it.
Yeah.
No, thanks, Chair. I think I wanted to talk on the issue of procedure. But that's a question that we should not be tempted to start the process from the beginning. Because here, the provinces have reflected on the Act and all those things and made submissions. And on this particular clause, as KZN has indicated, it's only Free State that has raised a concern. All other provinces which do not have a problem with that particular clause. And yes, in terms of the submissions here, there's no rare one thing. All of us, it's only Free State that has got a problem with that particular clause as it stands. And the department, notwithstanding that all other provinces are supportive of that, because the fact that we are not commenting, we are supporting that, they are trying to accommodate it by proposing a further amendment. And it's where the state must come in to say they are comfortable with the proposed amendment and what is our reflection on that specific, but not for us now to start again as province and say, no, we've got a problem. I can't stand here and say I've got a problem with that clause, because Northwest does not have a problem as my province. So I'm saying I might not be familiar with the procedure on how these things are done, but we should not allow those who know to as well mislead us.
Just summarize.
Oh, before they summarize, to respond to. Oh, wait, I forgot that. No, you see, we are not experts in terms of writing the law, but I think we must be very clear what we want. I don't want this ambiguity. From where I'm coming from, it was very clear. Mpumalanga wants every member to be full-time. And that's very clear. And therefore, the clause as it stands, there is a suggestion that the possibility exists that not all members would be full-time. As it stands now.
I'm a bit disturbed to hear that when we discuss matters of this nature, which are constitutional matters, we begin to attach costs as a deciding factor. When members of parliament became full-time members of parliament, there was no cost that was discussed at that time. And these are constitutional matters that we need to look at. And therefore, we've got to move from that premise. As far as I'm concerned, the amendment being proposed, I don't know how it will be drafted, but the clause as it stands now, it leaves a lot of ambiguity. And I hear what other colleagues are saying, that also covers the issue of cost and what have you. And to me, I want to agree with my colleague that the cost factor should not be an issue. Unless we're saying what we're dealing with here is not important enough for our communities where we come from. But if we fundamentally believe that these structures are important, therefore, we've got to be very careful in terms of wanting to put a cost tag on this matter. And Mpumalanga says all members must be full-time. How you craft it into law, I'm not an expert.
Yes, Honourable. Thank you very much. No, you see, Chairperson, when we as a legislature is sitting here, the first thing that we must ask, and that is why in the bill there will always be a footnote to say costing has been done. You can't say that no, we can't go into the cost and question the question. That is our duty as we sit here. That's the first thing. You see, I'm not sure how big is this committee that we are talking about. I will agree with Louis what Louis said. We must first check. And I personally want to know if it is 20 or 30, what is their salaries. And I am not against anything. I must be able to defend a decision that I was part and parcel of. That is why I'm asking these questions for clarity. Because when people are asking me outside this meeting, I must be able to defend what we have approved in this meeting.
Chairperson, I think it is important for us because we went back to report to our own provinces. And we went back to report with the information that was given to us by traditional leaders, by other stakeholders, and by the department. The clause as it stands, when we left here, and I know the Eastern Cape was one of the provinces who were very vocal around this particular area. Because the clause as it stands, traditional leaders indicated to us that this clause does not work precisely because they are not supported by government to do their work. You see? And that is the area where provinces then came in and said, no, we want full time. Now, I think my colleague over there should be correct, you see, because nobody indicated the cost implications to us. You know, for us to get feedback to our own provinces, to say this is the situation, because you see, this does not affect this house alone. It affects lower houses too, because legislatures are going to be affected because of costs too. You know. Now, if we have that information, we are able to can make a correct decision. Who might agree with Louis? Who might agree with somebody else? But we don't have the cost implications because they are saying the department is not supporting them. You know. And therefore, they can't do their work on the ground. You know, hence this particular problem. And if we can have that clarity, Chairperson, we are able to negotiate better as a province. Now we can't do that precisely because we don't have
all the information that is needed, because this is a new thing that is coming in now around costs. When the decision was taken to say, no, we want to go full time, nobody spoke about cost to us. Now it's coming in now. Let them clarify the situation to us now.
Okay, can I suggest a deadlock breaking mechanism to say provinces feel that members should be full time? Is that our feeling as provinces? That members should be full time. However, the department should go step further. Is it that we're going to finalize Monday on the set to investigate the cost implications? We can't be wasting more time on this one. I'm suggesting that. The principal bill, yes.
We said, Chairperson, we support clause 10-2 of the bill, which provides us that the president may designate certain members.
Just the F province.
Yes.
It's the feeling of the province. I want to move there before we go first.
Yeah.
Are we agreed?
We are guided by the negotiating.
We should be guided by the negotiating manager. Remember, we're negotiating on the mandate. It is a court mandate. So, we're not starting a fresh argument, even if by mistake we're using words that provoke engagement, serious engagements, Chair, including this thing of cost, the weight cost. And we must remember what this clause 2 does. Clause 2, it's a functions, it's just allocating functions. Certain functions to the president. And I don't think this clause as is debates the numbers of people that to be full time per se in totality. But what it says, it simply says the president, I mean, how does membership, full time membership happen? And therefore, Chair, hence we are saying for us, it's fine. So let's go back to the negotiating mandate and let's speak on the basis of those negotiating mandates.
Are we agreeing that that is the spirit of our understanding?
Yeah. You see, my comrade from the ANC, I think we must take that. You see, if we take a decision and say, all of us support that these people must be full time. It's binding to this house. He is saying that this information of costing was not before us then. Now, if we say here and now, we are supporting this thing, this the full time of all, then we must. The department must also clarify the issue of costing, yes, so that all of us must say, yes, we support it. But you see, to take a blanket decision, yes, to say all of us support it, the consequences of the cost will be dangerous.
Yes,
yes.
So you see, there's a question of principle that we've got to understand, is that we can't invent fresh things. We are yet to negotiate. We can't postpone matters till the 3rd, because on the 3rd we are getting the final mandates from the province. And if that final mandate from Mpumalanga says we cannot support the bill because of 10-2, then Mpumalanga will vote against the bill. That's the simple matter on how the process in this house works. Now, I've had a quick look, at least, and I must correct my colleague there who says it's only Free State. I can show him the clauses on the different pages. But there's at least 3 provinces that are very adamant that it should be full-time. There are others that say there must be more full-time members, and so we must now negotiate on that. We must decide, do we agree with those provinces that want full time? Do we want to agree that it's good as it is in the bill as Prozim himself proposed? Or do we amend it slightly? That is what we've got to negotiate. And then we go back to our provinces and say, this is what we negotiated, but we failed or we achieved or whatever the position is.
We shouldn't waste a lot of time on this issue because we're not finalizing anything now.
Once I've been discussing and looking at all the processes, as Gauteng, we don't have a program on whatever way this whole process goes. We will go with what this house takes. As we'll support KwaZulu-Natal, the Northwest. That will be our process. The process just.
I think also from the Eastern Cape Chair, we concur with the Gauteng.
Other provinces? The Eastern Cape will support it as it stands, this team too.
The Free State will support you.
Then the Pombo will support you.
Seven.
As it is.
Malanga is very clear that they want full time.
Except Malang. Who's left? None. Therefore, majority complain. Majority support suggestions. Yes, we can go on. On page 2, now on page 2 now, I need guidance from you, Chakas, whether I'm going through the document or I'm simply isolating the issues. On page 2, the same problems raise the following issues. On the National House of Transcendence Bill. That clause 4, election proceedings to be conducted by independent body instead of the Premier or a designated person. And we are saying, that the bill provides that the Premier may designate a person to conduct the election. And such a person may be member of the Independent Electoral Commission, who is independent, as we suspect is being requested by the province concerned, and we say in that respect, then there is no need for an amendment.
There we are. Can we comment? Let's just hear from you, Western Cape. I just want provincial comment on that one, Western Cape.
Western Cape support.
Free State. Agreed. Gauteng. Mpumalanga. KZN.
Okay, supporting the clause as is, right? Yeah, all right. We do
not want. Northern Cape, is that it? Eastern Cape, I guess. Which province am I left?
Limpopo.
You forget your
my province?
See, when we tell you forget that you are somehow a permanent deputy representing your province, yes?
Limpopo?
Agreed, Chairperson. Agreed. Majority agreed.
Same bill, clause 11, sub clause 2, B and C, by the same province as the Free State, saying then that substitution of the word may for the word must in clause 11, that is referring to powers and duties that must not be left at the discretion of the National House, but it must be peremptory.
department respond by saying certain powers and duties of the National House should be at the discretion of the House concerned and should not be obligatory. Otherwise, this could lead to a situation where the National House cannot perform its responsibilities and where it has it can make discretions. So we are saying that, that then there's no amendment.
We shall comment? Is that it? Fine. Northwest? Fine. Silverstone?
done by the president. yet time is upon us with respect to this. And we are saying, in our view, there is no need for an amendment. Thank you.
Apology. I was just getting mandate that not worth to speak on this, on that document. It's very much the other meeting.
Can we comment?
Yes, just I just need a clarity from the department on the issue of the commissioners not necessarily disagreeing with the presentation. If they can just upscale my understanding whether the issue of commissioners as the term supposed to suggest to me should be a proclaimed process by the president, minister, or MEC for a specific function or determination, should there be a need for it to be in this bill, first and foremost, because to me it's supposed to be a particular process defined at a particular when a problem arises, therefore there will be a need of solution to appoint commissioners or something. Is there a real need for it to be specifically on the bill? Because I assume the president can determine at a specific time and period that there is this matter to be handled, therefore there are processes delegated to those particular executing authorities to do so.
Before I do that, with your permission, can I make this suggestion? Also, in order to help honorable members, as the case before, I found myself having to jump down from the National House Bill to the Framework Act. Your permission, I would make a suggestion that let's finish all the issues relating to the National House Transaction Bill. Then we come to the issues relating to the Framework Act, with your permission, sir.
Can you just pack it and then, Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Then on page 4, again going back to the National Health Trust Auditors, page 4 of our document, money coming from the Eastern Cape, referring to clause 3, sub clause 1A, where they're saying that the headmen or headwomen should not be excluded to be members of National House of Trust Leaders. They may have more qualities and knowledge than some traditional leaders. And the response from the department is referring to that clause, that the clause provides that where on good grounds shown, a headman and a headwoman may be elected as a member of the National House. We are saying they are not totally excluded where there are valid reasons that can be presented by that particular province. Then this category of traditional leadership could also be be part of the National House traditional leadership. Thank you. So no amendment is recommended. Thank you.
Comment?
Thank you, Richard.
Not well told me that they agree. Umaranga? Chesetan? Mpoko? Agreed. Houghton? Western Cape? Agreed.
Page 8, members. Clause 3, sub clause 4.
Page 8.
I think it's coming from Captain. The delegation from the province to the National House of Trustees must include women or women. The response of the department is that the bill, as it stands, provides that at least one third of members of the National House of Trust Leaders must be women. Provincial legislation also provides for women to be elected as members of the National House. So So in that respect, no amendment is recommended. Thank you. member of the National House of Charter Leader to vacate seat if recalled by the Provincial House. The department is saying this is not supported as members are elected for a term of 5 years. Membership should only be subjected to the provisions of Clause 6, where, for instance, talking about some misconduct on eligibility of that member. Only those issues that may disqualify a member from being a member of the National House. And so no amendment is recommended, that's what they're saying.
Point of the page 9 that we're on now, on the left-hand side, has the province indicated as Department of Local Government and Housing. Who's that? Who's that program? Is that the housing department, sir?
Inhabitants housing.
Chairperson, I don't think that I understand this one. I think I need vendors clarity. Yeah. It says a member of National House can vacate its if recalled by the provincial house. I'm not sure whether I understand the response of the department.
Further clarify,
Chairperson, Clause 6 of the bill deals with the conditions under which a member of the House vacates his or her seat. It contains a number of conditions when a member vacates. So those are the conditions under which a member will vacate his or her seat. And it does not include a recall by the provincial house which elected the member to the national house. So we're proposing, the department's proposing, that clause 6 is sufficient as it stands. Those are the conditions under which a member should vacate his seat. And that the recall by the provincial house should not be included. That's the proposal. Does anybody understand now?
Okay. Anybody against? Clause 8, subclause 6, quorum to increase from 51% to 2/3, and there was no motivation provided for this proposal, and the department said no amendment is recommended. Thank you.
Sorry, Chairperson, to take you back. I just want to understand this point. Who sends the members from the provinces to represent the traditional leaders in the National House of Traditional Leaders? It's the provinces. If it is the provinces, why restrict their power to recall if they want to recall a member? That is the question that I want to. That's why I said that I did not understand. And now when I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking that the province sends a person to say go and represent us in the National House, and the same province does not have power to recall if that person is misbehaving there, and send another person.
Okay. Yes. Jay, if we look at clause 6 of the bill. Indirectly, it still provides for the recalling of a member. If you look at clause 6, paragraph H, it says, in a case of a member contemplated in section 3.1, if the member ceases to be a member of the provincial house that elected him or her, or ceases to be a chairperson of the local house, as the case may be. So if the province has found that the member of the National House who they had sent to the National House as a province and he ceases to be a member of that provincial house, then automatically that member ceases to be a member of the National House. Let's say, for instance, the member committed a misconduct in the provincial house.
and the member is dealt with by the provincial house and found to be unfit to continue being a member, automatically that member will also cease to be a member of the national house. So that's a situation where a member can be recalled. But I think what was envisaged in the comment is where a house, a provincial house, can just simply decide that we don't want member so-and-so to continue representing us in the national house. And there are no clear guidelines to say in what situations can that happen. But what I'm trying to raise is to say that if a member seems to be a member of the provincial house, automatically that member can't be in the national house. So in a way, that recalling power is still there.
Is it now clarified?
It's bad law, Chairperson, but it's fine, but it's bad law.
I want you to be satisfied. Can you? Yes?
No, what we are saying, as Mpungose was indicating, is referring us to some place somewhere the clause only showed, you know, it's an orphan clause. So, but we are saying fine, it explains the context under which the circumstances under which this clause would be applied. Other areas are therefore implied in the other clauses. So we are fine as is, though we are saying generally it's bad law, and I'm sure the estate law advisor should agree. Yeah, I mean, we're not lawyers, but we think it's a bad law. All right, thanks, Chair.
I'm sure KZN is not different. It's agreed because the provincial decision. Anybody against? None, I agreed. Either. Clause 9, sub clause 5, on page 9. Clause 8, or sub clause 6. Clause 8, sub clause 6. The quorum to be increased from 51% to 2/3. I said earlier there was no motivation provided for this proposal, and so consequently, we did not entertain an amendment to. Anybody against? No one agreed. Clause 9, sub clause 5. Only a member of the escort to be acting chair. Again, no motivation provided. The department says the National House certainly should have the discretion to decide who should act as chair in the absence of a chairperson. So in that sense, no amendment is necessary. Recommended. Thank you. Agreed. Okay.
Yeah. No, Chair. We agree. We don't have a problem. What we just wanted to check, because we are discussing on negotiating mandates of the provinces, is why must we spend a lot of time on an issue that was brought forward by a department? Because we're dealing with negotiating mandates. We're wasting time on this particular process, while provinces did not even look into those particular issues. Because the negotiating mandate does not say what we're reading here.
Yes, I think the province must express it. The document affecting time is, let's express whether it comes from the department or not. Let's say agreed or not agreed. We ourselves remove what we don't want. So are we agreeing? Can you proceed?
Thank you, sir. Clause 10, sub clause 1, page 10. Chair, deputy chair to be full time, and the status of other members to be at discretion of the president. We have already dealt with this one. Am I correct?
Yes, yes, okay.
Clause 15, where no provincial house has been established, provision should be made for a relationship between the National House of Transnational Leaders and the local house or transnational councils. And we agree with that. Clause 15 has to be amended.
Anybody against? Agreed.
Excuse me, sorry. Page 17, clause 8, subclause 1b. The president to meet the National House of Transition leaders 3 times a year and not only once. That comes from the Hertzberger. The department says clause 8.1 subclause 1, clause 8 subclause 1, he provides that the president or his designee must address the annual opening of the National House of Transition Leaders. Other engagements may be arranged with the president without providing for that in the legislation. And so no amendment is commended.
Anybody against? Agreed.
Thank you. Clause 3, 1, subclause 1A. Membership of the National House should be represented, should represent all traditional communities or cultural groupings in provinces. And the response from the department is that 3 members of the National House of Traditional Leaders are elected by each provincial house. The composition of the 3 members is subject to the electoral process taking place within the province. So no amendment is recommended. Thank you.
Anybody against? Agreed.
Clause 3. Provinces such as Gauteng should not have representation on the National House of Transition Leaders as they are already represented by their province of origin. The response from the department is that the composition of the National House of Transition Leaders is regulated by Clause 3. And in terms of this clause, all provinces that have traditional leaders have representation in the National House of Transition Leaders. No amendment to comment.
Is it
that?
Yes.
No.
Sorry to waste your time, Honorable Chair. I just want to explain this because fortunately I was part of those deliberations. I thought you'd capture the mandate of the province, but it's good that you went district by district. The argument was all people who are at Hertzibandi, no, I'm putting it wrongly, most of them work in Gauteng, and most of them have dwellings in Gauteng. They, in the main, they would be in their area of Hertzibande around December, or when there are issues of Iminemo and all those other activities. In terms of them following their traditional happenings and cultural activities, they would obviously go to Hertzibande, nowhere else. And therefore, that comes from that perspective. But I don't want us to look at it as if it's a provincial mandate. You know, it was a debate that was put forward by one of the regions in Mpumalanga to say why must they? Because in the main, they then said some of them come from Limpopo, some of them come from Wendebele. Some of them even deep in Swaziland, some of them in Kwakwa, and therefore, you know, suggesting that Gauteng does not have traditional people, but that is wrong. But these are actually just views of the people. But all that is wrong, and I don't want us to take it as if it was these were the red facts, and the committee, you know, also agreed with that.
Gauteng is burning.
No, Chair,
See, we must indicate that there was a point, yes, where Gauteng did not have traditional leaders. We have two coming from the Northwest. There was a point where those eras, like Harrisburg, Mpumalanga, was part of Gauteng. We had traditional leaders from that particular area. Now, I'm just saying, you see, from Hammanskraal, that side, the chiefs, that's why there are two areas. When the part of the Northwest was incorporated into Gauteng, it brought traditional leaders with this one that had a lot of conflict now lately. That specific area of Merafong, that specific area, those areas brought in traditional leaders. That's why we have two as we speak now.
Yeah, it's like when Eastern Cape can be redemarcated to Western Cape. I'm joking out of what I'm
going to. That's my point, wrong. Once we demarcate, I'm just saying that all the traditional leaders that were in Eastern Cape will soon be here. It's a rate of immigration.
I think that we are concerned that we. Is there anybody here?
Page 18,
Clause 10, Subclause 2, all the members of the National House of Assemblies to be full time, we've already dealt with that. Clause 12, title of the accounting officer should be amended to being secretary. The saying Clause 12 provides that the minister must appoint a public servant as secretary to the National House of Assemblies. The bill does not provide for an accounting officer, so no amendment.
Anybody against?
No. Chairperson, I don't know where they got that from. Because even at Eshanzin and Kharti, the deal was supported with only the emphasis, you know, tabled down. So I don't know where exactly that comes from. The bill was supported as it is, but obviously you understand that there was a position put out by the House itself. And insofar as the mandate is concerned, that was not an issue.
Do you like to clarify?
Okay.
Thank you.
Chairperson, I just like to refer the House to the negotiating mandate in respect of the Governor, in respect of this specific bill, on page 2, it says under Hertz bonding, bullet 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that it says that the title of the accounting officer in the administration of the National House of Traditional Leaders should be that of secretary.
Can you give them the page?
Two, ma'am. The one dealing with the negotiating mandate dealing with the National Health Bill. And then it says report by the Portfolio Committee. The report for the Portfolio Committee on page 2. Under point 5, inputs and comments. 5.1, it says health abundance. And then bullet number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 deals with this issue. It's on page 2.
Okay, accepted. Generally, is there anybody against? Agreed. Can the department proceed? Clause 17. Finish National House of Traditional Leaders Act first. So I'm skipping that to page 19. Clause 8, subclause 6 and 7, chair to be elected by majority members of
members of the National House of Transplant Leaders. The response from the department says, Clause 8, subclause 6 and 7, deals with quorums and requirements for a valid vote. A quorum is 51% of the members, and a valid vote requires two-thirds of the members present to vote in favor of the matter. In that respect, no amendment is recommended. Anybody against? Accepted. Thank you. Clause 14 and Clause 15 and subclause 3. Not only kings or queens, but all senior transplanters to be part of the biannual meetings with the National House of Transplanters. Response is, due to the fact that in Clause 14, the membership of the National House of Transplanters is restricted to senior transplanters only. This meeting is restricted to queens and queens only who are not necessarily members of the National House of Transplanters. Clause 15, subclause 3, also makes provision that the National House of Transplanters must meet with the House biannually. So in this respect, there is enough provision for this. No amendment is recommended. Anybody against? Agreed. This is no clause here. It is saying that it's from a Tanzanian. The National House of Transplanters to ensure that the government's resources are properly utilized by transplant leaders. And its response by the government is, this is not a function of the National House of Transplant Leaders. So no amendment is recommended. Anybody against? Agreed. Clause 15, subclause 5 and 6, the chair of the National House of Transplant Leaders not to have a discretion to establish a body of chairpersons. The department agrees with that and proposes that chairperson and the secretary should also establish a board of secretaries, which means then clause 15, subclause 5 and 6 to be amended accordingly. Thank you.
Anybody against? Agreed.
Thank you. Clause 11, House must meet quarterly to evaluate socio-economic development and service delivery. Response from the department says, Clause 11 deals with powers and duties of the National House of Transplanters and not with meetings. One of the duties of the National House of Transplanters is to cooperate with the provincial houses to promote socioeconomic development and service delivery. So in that respect, no amendment is recommended.
Anybody against? Agreed.
Clause 10 and clause and section 16. All House of Transplant Leaders in provinces to dissolve at the same time as the National House of Transplant Leaders. The response from Tibani says the bill aligns the term of the houses of all houses in provinces with that of the National House of Transplant Leaders. Which means that section 16 to be amended to align term of office of the provincial House of Transplant Leaders with that of the National House of Transplant Leaders. Thank you.
Anybody against? Omadi. Agreed.
Thanks, sir. And that's clause 15. The National House must have programs of visiting and assisting provincial houses.
Okay. Are you in transaction?
No. Just trying to check. We're dealing with two houses here, the national and the provincial houses. But we also have local houses. What happens to them? Happening to the local houses? Because in most cases, there is no reference to the local houses.
Somewhere there is an aspect that deals with provincial and local houses. Maybe when you come there, it might answer the question. But the department can answer.
Chairperson, I think throughout the term of office of all the houses are aligned, that of a local house, provincial house, and national house, and even with
traditional councils, that all the terms are aligned to the National House.
Chair, then can we make sure that we have that stated, you know, when we talking about alignment, that it starts from the beginning up to the end.
Agreed. Can we proceed?
Thank you, sir.
Clause 15, page 20. The National House must have programs of visiting and assisting provincial houses. And the department says clause 15 provides just for that. And no amendments recommended.
Agreed?
Agreed. Thank you, sir. Clause 3, subclause 1A. Headmen and headwomen not to be members of the National House of Trustees. The department says provincial peculiarities require that headmen and headwomen can be members depending on the circumstances in that particular province. As you recall, that we've said that where there are certain circumstances in that particular province that necessitate the appointment of or the election of headmen, that must also be catered for. That that's what we say. No amendment is recommended.
Anybody against?
I agree.
Thank you, sir.
Clause 5 of page 21. Members of the municipal councils and provincial legislatures and parliament should not be disqualified to be members of the National House of Trustees. Responses. The policy of government is that members of legislatures should not be members of traditional leadership institutions in order to promote efficient functioning of the institution. We're saying no amendment is recommended. Thank you.
Anybody against? Agreed.
Thank you, sir. From Kangala, clause 8, subclause 1B. Quarterly meetings between the National House and the President. I think a similar issue has been dealt with here. Clause 8.1, the department says, provides that the President or his designee must address an annual opening of the House. Other engagement may be arranged with the President without providing for in that legislation, we said earlier. No amendment is recommended.
Anybody against? Agreed.
Clause 10, subclause 2. On page 7, line 20, after the comma 7, insect to insect or all. We're saying, then see, well, let's have a look at the comment, one under Free State. To say that no need for the amendment.
Anybody against?
Agreed. Thank you. Clause 4, subclause 3 from KZF. Election proceedings must be conducted by an independent electoral commission. Indicated that a legal opinion was requested by the Provincial Portfolio Committee on the constitutionality of clause 5, subclause 1. Subclause A, qualification for membership of the National House of Trustee Leaders. Yes, they see the comment to under Free State. Yes, there's no amendment recommended.
Great.
Leader is an African and must be amended and replaced with the African vernacular term. The response from the department says the provincial legislatures or legislation caters for vernacular terminology to be used in this regard. The framework legislation, on the other hand, seeks to find terms that may apply to all provinces. That's why we stick to English terms. No amendment recommended. Thank you.
Anybody against? Agreed.
When these bills are translated into the 11 languages, what term is used in the different languages? If the English vernacular is used in the English bill.
That's the question. If it's translated in 11 languages, what term would be used? But we agree not. Do we have a clinic?
Chairperson, I propose that the member must take a dictionary and check it up in the dictionary.
There is a proposal, and it's going to the proposal of a listener. But generally, we agree with the statement.
Page 25, no clause. The word Tribunal Council must be amended to Royal Council. The response from the department says the word traditional was adopted in the white paper on traditional leadership and governance of 2003 and was used also in the Framework Act. To amend it in this amendment bill will require a complete overhaul of the Framework Act. No amendment recommended.
Anybody against?
Agreed. Thank you. Clause 10, subclause 2. Five executive committee members of the House must all be full time. I think we've dealt with that. It's a comment on the free state.
Agreed.
Thank you. Clause chapter 3. On page 26. Section 29 of the Principal Act, clause 12. The bill should provide that all traditional leaders are public office bearers. And the response from the department says kings, queens, senior traditional leaders, and headmen are already recognized as public office bearers in terms of Section 29 of the Principal Act. Clause 12 of the bill also provides that the principal traditional leader is a public office bearer. No amendment recommended.
Anybody against?
Agreed. Lastly, clause 15. The meetings of the National House and Provincial Houses must be held on a quarterly basis. The response from the department says, in addition to meetings between the National House and Provincial Houses, the bill in clause 15 provides for chairperson's forum to meet regularly. The rules of the National House also provide for other forums which may be established for interaction between the houses. So in this regard, the bill amendment is recommended.
Anybody against?
Agreed.
Can we take the framework?
Thank you, please, Honorable Chairperson. We are now doing with amendments to the National Transitional Leaders and Governance Framework Amendment Bill. And I wish to draw attention of Honorable Members to page 2. It's clause 8, which says substitution of the word may for the word must relating to support to traditional council. And the response from the department says this obligation should be at the discretion of government as it could be influenced by factors outside the control of government, such as lack of capacity and finances. So no amendment is recommended.
Anybody against?
Agreed. Thank you. Northern Cape. Clause 23, subclause 1, and clause in amendment 26A. the president to appoint commissioners and not the minister. And the response from the department says the appointment of commissioners and members of committees by the president is not supported because it will result in a cumbersome process due to the fact that there could be as many as 8 provincial committees. And if this were to be done by the president, with all his busy schedule, and not by the minister, as you are commenting, then there would be a lot of delay, and yet time is of the essence in this respect to deal with these issues. So in this regard, no amendment is recommended.
Anybody against?
Agreed. Thank you. I seem to recall, Honourable Chairman, that there was a question from the Honourable Member from the Eastern Cape, Honourable Kosha. I don't really ask the question. I can't recall what the question is, what the question was, but I know that there was a question in this respect. Yes.
Can you take it out of the packet?
Thank you, Chairman. I wanted to get a clarity on the inclusion of this process in the bill, understanding that appointment of commission or commissioners for a specific purpose is always ad hoc in nature, and that duty in terms of the law may be delegated to the president or any executing authority. Would there be therefore a need specifically for this bill to encapsulate that kind of a portion of the law or act? Is it not well administered in those already established systems of lawmaking?
Did you hear it correctly?
Yes, Chair. It is correct, Chair, in terms of the Commissions Act. The President may, at any time when there's an issue that needs to be investigated, appoint a commission to look at that particular matter. Also in provinces, there are commissions acts in provinces where premiers can appoint commissions. But also you recall that in terms of specific legislation, a commission may be established as a permanent commission given a specific period of time, just like the TRC, which existed for a period of time to look at the specific issues, and then it ceased to exist. So this is just an amendment in the Framework Act for a commission that already exists. It has existed for the last 5 years, but because it has not completed its mandate, the proposal here is that the commission be reconfigured, basically. We have a new commission, give it another 5 years, just to work on the issues of the disputes and claims on traditional leadership. After that, it will cease to exist. After the commission has ceased to exist, I mean, if there's any issue that needs to be dealt with, I think then the appointment of commissions in terms of the Commissions Act in respect of traditional leadership may then kick in. But otherwise, this is a very specific mandate for this commission for 5 years to look at the claims and disputes in relation to traditional leadership. Thanks, Chair.
Clarified?
Chairperson, I think the question from the Honourable Member from Eastern Cape is very clear. It is to say, once we include the commission in the bill, you are making it to be a permanent thing. Because even if it does its work and then finishes its work within 3 years, because already it is in the bill, that means because the bill prescribes that the commission will be there for 5 years, because it is in the bill, that means even in the next 10, the commission will be established, even if it has finished its work, because it is in the bill. That is the question he's asking. Why did we have to include the commission in the bill in the first place? Because the commission is supposed to work on ad hoc basis.
Well, the understanding is that the commission will be established by operation of law. That's why the wording is, there is hereby established a commission. But also there is a further clause, further down the bill, to say the mandate of the commission is 5 years. So after 5 years, automatically by operation of law, the commission ceases to exist. Unless otherwise, if the president wishes to extend the mandate of the commission. For instance, what was called the Labour Commission, its mandate expired at mid-September, I think it was 23rd September, in terms of the legal understanding. But there's an attempt to extend it by another 3 months for them to wrap up. So by operation of law, that commission ceases to exist.
Request the Honourable not to intimidate.
Okay.
To remain calm, please.
But just to wrap up, the understanding is that by operation of law, the commission will be there for 5 years. End of 5 years, it ceases to exist. The fact that the clauses will still be in the bill, there will be no, let me say, way to re-invoke, you know, the provisions in the Act, because the 5 years would have expired and the Commission's mandate would not have been extended. So it will be like that. It's just the law, Chairperson. That's the understanding.
Let me give the opportunity to the state law advisor just to, please.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to punctuate on what the department official has alluded to. This commission is a statutory body which is created by the statute and by this Act, and will operate in terms of what is provided by this Act. Different from what other commissions are provided for in the Commissions Act. So this one, it has its own lifespan that will operate in terms of the Act. So there's nothing that is untoward in creating a statutory body.
Room.
Thank you very much, Chair.
But you see, Chairperson, I hear the concern. Why is it necessary to put it in here? Because the minister can at any time appoint a commission if something is happening. But why are we putting it in here? That's just clarity.
Chairperson, I think this commission has been there in the Act itself. We are only requested to extend its lifespan. No? Precisely because they have not completed their work. Because that's the understanding we had in the first input we had from the department. Now, we're not creating something new. It is there in the Act, the present Act that is there. Now, we're just extending it, and that's our understanding, that it will live for another 5 years. And therefore, I don't see any thing wrong with it. If it wasn't there and we had to establish a new Act, it was something else, a new this particular commission, then it was something else. I would have then agreed with what the issues raised by KZN and the Eastern Cape. But because we are just extending, I'm not sure what the problem might be. Answering what Comrade Bloom is saying there, that's right. You see, that's the point, because that was our understanding in the first briefing. When we read the Act, it was there.
Honorable Rue is provoked.
Yeah, no, Chair. You see, to be honest, Chair, and I'm a Catholic and a communist, so I do like to say things because I was taught to confess. You see, the department, to be honest, Chair, I'm totally not happy with the whole sort of drafting of some of these things. For instance, unless they point to us now, in fact, I think they must read even what the state law is saying, because they are just explaining, and that's not what they are saying properly in this thing. Because, you see, and also the legal part has let us down. You see, commissions are proclaimed. You know, DA can just jump up now and say, we need a commission on that and a commission on that. Well, you don't need an act. And the question we are raising, why this thing should be in the bill and be defended in the bill? Because commissions are by proclamation, so to speak. You don't need a statute, as the state law is saying. As the state law is saying, we don't need a statute. So the question we are asking is that, why must this thing be, this clause must be here? Because, you see, and it's bad drafting. I'm not a lawyer, Chair, but I can tell you. I mean, it's bad drafting, keeps slotting things here and there where they don't belong. It's almost somebody was doing groceries, you know, and was putting things and this and that. Because, I mean, I don't understand why it should be here, Chair. Honestly speaking, and we do have a concern. And unless, Chair, there's Mpumwase was indicating with somewhere, and he says somewhere in the, he says somewhere down the line, you will find that there is a limiting clause to the term and the extension of the term of the commission. So I'm saying these things must be properly clarified and so that there's coherence and easy reading of the law. You know, Chair, we have a history. The courts have been lashing at us about writing confusing legislation, and we kept losing cases on these things. So I think this one must be quite clear. If they want to go to strengthen the formulation, but it must be clear that that's what they intend, that this thing is 5 years, and there's proper and strong limitation clause to that. Otherwise, this thing should not be in here because the president could have long... Now they're having a deadline, for instance. This one is lapsing next week. So the president could just do it by Friday next week. They have a good commission without a clause here, without waiting for this bill to be passed. So I'm saying, Chair, really, they must be quite clear now as to what they intend to do with this thing. Thanks, Chair.
Yes, mindful of the fact that the venue by 12 o'clock is booked by other committees. I would allow the state advisor to...
I just wanted to get from the honourable member that the question here is it the is it questioning the name of this body that is created by the Act, or is it the commission being here? I just want to.
Just to add. Maybe a little bit of history to refresh the memories of members. Like I indicated earlier, this commission has been there for the last 5 years. But the limitation with the current formulation in the Act is that it did not allow the commission to adopt its own, let's say, mode of operation, like to subdivide and to hear matters as quickly as possible. As a result, all the members of the commission, and there were 12, they had to sit and hear matters, all 12 of them. Otherwise, if one of them was not there, then the sitting was illegal. So as a result, the commission could not finalize its work in the last 5 years. So what the amendment seeks to do is basically to reformulate the commission to make sure that it performs its work expeditiously and cost-effectively. It also creates committees to sit in provinces, to hear matters in provinces, so that it finalizes its work expeditiously. Chair, this is a very specific commission. It looks at all the claims and all the disputes in respect of traditional leadership. As you would know from the history where we come from with the institution of traditional leadership, there are many of these claims. There are many of these disputes. There was interference before with the institution by the previous government. So what the commission seeks to do in terms of this bill is to ensure that we correct the wrongs of the past. So it's a very, very specific commission with a very, very specific lifespan of 5 years. After 5 years, it ceases to exist. So it's not like one of those commissions that can be set up at any time, but it's a very, very specific commission. Thank you.
take test the views of the provinces would waste time on this one. All right.
Being a traditional leader from many years ago, I get a bit confused. Yeah, from other countries. My plan has died out. Chair, I'm also confused about the communist being a Catholic, but that's another story. This commission and the Ensapo commission that the member from the department mentioned, is that the same thing? Please, I'm sorry if I'm stupid, but I'm confused about the thing, because there was also the request that the decisions of the commission be rescinded, so that the newly appointed commission nullified, so that it can be carried on with. But the response from the department at the time was that it is only an extension; it's not a reconfiguration of the commission. If I can just get clarity on that, because there is a big problem in the Mpumalanga about the Ensapo Commission that we need to sort out somewhere.
Okay. Can we get clarity on this, and so that we close the matter and proceed?
Okay, Chair. The I think the legal understanding in grappling with this issue to say whether this is a new commission or it's a continuation of the old commission. But if you look at the mandate of this commission, it's just pretty much the same sort of mandate, just like the so-called double commission. The only thing that the bill seeks to do is to reconfigure the commission, to provide for provincial committees, to provide for a smaller commission at national level, but the mandate is still the same. So one can safely say the new commission is a successor in law from the old commission. So the only thing is that we've reconfigured the commission to ensure that it does its work, like I've said, expeditiously and cost-effectively. Because this commission that whose mandate is expiring now, they have spent, for instance, a lot of money while the output really has been very, very little in the last 5 years. So what we're trying to do is to save the money, to save the cost, is to make sure that the commission functions expeditiously. And it works where people are in the provinces with the committees. And if you look at, for instance, the clause 23(1), it's very clear to say that the commission is appointed for a period not exceeding 5 years. So the intention here is to make sure that this new style commission, the reconfigured commission, operates within this mandate, for this mandate within the 5 year period, and it completes its work. After that, there will be no further commission on traditional leadership disputes and claims. And then what the member was asking can then be implemented to say if there's any issue at any stage after 5 years, then the premier in the province can then set up a commission to look at that specific matter and dispose of it. And also if there's a need for the president at national level, then a commission can then be set up to deal with that. But this one is a very specific commission to deal with all the problems that currently obtain with regard to traditional leadership. Thanks, Chair.
One last one, please.
You see, we are putting up commission. My question is in clarity. Is it full-time people who serves on this commission for the another 5 years or what? And the question that, Mr. You see, the department is saying that 5 years, there was no value for money out of that commission. We are reappointing them now. What is the guarantee that they are going to deliver?
The department?
The Chair, maybe just to come in there also. Chair, there is no guarantee that the same people who are currently in the commission, whose mandate is expiring, will also be appointed to continue serving in the new commission. And then secondly, the one of the reasons why the commission could not really function expeditiously was that you appoint people who are full-time elsewhere, they only do this important work on a part-time basis. So there was no real full-time commitment
to do the work and finalize. So what the bill then now provides for is that these members to be appointed into these commissions and also the committees of the commissioning provinces can either be full time or part time, so that they work, you know, expeditiously. I think maybe to attend to the issue by the honourable member there will be maybe for the committee to decide on the full time or part time status of the commissioners. To say for this commission now to not to face the same problem like the other commission, maybe the committee may then decide to say these members must be full time, so that they dedicate their energy and their time to doing this work and finalizing its mandate within the 5 years. But the bill currently provides for either full time or part time, so the minister may determine whether the members are full time or part time. Thanks.
Okay, Doctor.
Chairperson, the Ndlovu Commission term of office ended at the end of September. Was it at the end of September? 23rd. Does it mean that this the commission now we are re-establishing, we are putting in the bill, is not operational, and it won't be operational until this bill is passed and signed by the president? Even if the president signs this bill next year, that means the disputes and the claims that are there, they will stay as they are, because the bill won't be operational until it is signed by the president.
President, thank you, Chairperson. I think the honourable member is correct. The commission will only become operational as soon as the bill has been signed. And also within the bill, you will see, we hope that this bill will be signed before that, because the term of office of the, let me call it, the outgoing commission will expire on 31st of January. And the term, this new commission will be starting to work as from the 1st of February. And also to add, Chairperson, is that all claims and disputes received by the Ndlovu Commission will be deemed to be disputes and claims received by this commission. But there is another clause to expedite the work also, is to say all claims and disputes received will be reviewed together with the department to see whether there is no way to refer some of the claims and disputes that may be not necessary to be dealt with by a commission, to refer them back to the administration, just to speed up the work. And work will also happen simultaneously in provinces. That's why there are committees. Currently, the old commission only worked as a commission, and, you know, there was no simultaneous operational actions. So the whole idea of having this commission is to speed up work and to make sure that everything is done cost-effectively and to really involve provinces in the whole process. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I'm pleading for suggestion because we're not doing oversight. Let's suggest. Yeah, in terms of mandate, let's suggest.
I have a very clear mandate on this thing. That's why, sorry, Chair, I know you have a time constraint, but it was very optimistic to think we'd be finished by 12. The decisions by the Ndlovu Commission. Now, let me be specific about the Endeavour King. Is that cast in stone, or can that be revisited? Because I have a very clear mandate. I attended one of the public hearings, and the mandate was very, very clear to me as a elected representative in this House to pursue this matter. So I want to hear what the department says, Chair, before we carry on.
I will all ask questions. Can the department respond? Wait, department, Honourable Louis.
Yeah, maybe, Chair, it would help us that their answers, I think they do have enough people there to find for me, just for me, Chair, because I don't find the clause, the limiting clause, to that's our concern. That if this thing goes ahead as it looks, where is the limiting clause, how strong it is, if they could just find it for me, Chair, to refer. Because it might be that we go back with this reference to the legislature for the final mandate, but otherwise we do have serious problems.
Thank you. Limiting clause. Parliament respond.
Chairperson, maybe I'll just take one because we're still looking for the limiting clause. But the first question on the work done by Inhlaba Commission, whether will the incoming commission review the work done by that commission? Chairperson, it is not going to be possible. The work done by Inhlaba in terms of the act in which Inhlaba Commission was operating, the decisions are final. Anybody who would want to challenge those decisions may go to the relevant court to challenge those decisions in terms of the legislation that established that court. Thank you.
Chair, the limiting clause, as asked for by the honourable member, maybe Chair, just to clarify, because members might be confused, there is a bill as it was, let's say, finalised by Parliament last year. But as you would know, there are further proposed amendments. So on the further proposed amendments, what appears as clause 23.1, establishing the commission. 23.1 says the minister must, after consultation with the National House, by noticing the Government Gazette, appoint the chairperson and not more than four persons for a period not exceeding 5 years as members of the commission. So it's very, very clear to say they are appointed for 5 years and not exceeding 5 years. So that is the clause I think the honourable member was looking for. So this commission, its life will not exceed 5 years. They look at these specific matters and they cease to exist by operation of law. So if this act, let's say for instance it comes into operation by 1 January 2010, 5 years later, by 31st December, 5 years later, the commission must cease to exist. And there's no provision in here now for any extension for the life of the commission. Thank you.
Thank you. And can we now agree or disagree? Everybody again?
Chairperson, the problem is you are referring us to the amendment clause now. What is the establishing clause as introduced at the National House, at the National Assembly?
All right, Chair, I think maybe also to refresh the memories of the members. When these bills went to Parliament last year, the issue of the commission was not included. And I think that's what the minister and the deputy minister were here to explain, the first meeting that we had with the select committee this year, to say that in addition to the issues that were covered last year, there are further issues. The two critical issues, for instance, the issue of the commission as well as the issue of what is coined the principal traditional leader. So those are the two critical issues that have been introduced as further proposed amendments in addition to the bills as they were by August last year when they were passed by Parliament. So what we're discussing now, the issue of the commission, falls under those new proposed amendments. So if you look at the bill as is, you won't see that. So it's a separate document that deals with the commission. So the establishing clause, as the member is saying, is basically clause 22 of the new proposed amendments, which establishes the commission on traditional leadership disputes and claims. Thank you, Chair.
No, Chair, I wanted to second KZN that let's go back to our provinces and seek further mandates around the specific matter. Just the specific matter, because it's now becoming more confusing. Thank you.
Let's hear. Is that Kit?
I think we're fine, Chair.
Northern Cape, not here. Western Cape? Yeah, fine. We're going back.
I support honourable
Restate. KZN is the proposed. Pumalang? To go back to the
Minister?
Yes.
All right. Agreed. Can we proceed on this matter? We need to, as we go to final mandate, it must be that be dealt at the provincial level again. Thank you, Chairperson. Does that mean all reference to the commission must be skipped now? So that we can. Okay, thank you. Then, and I go on to page 4 of our document, submission from the Eastern Cape on clause 2B, 3B, A, and 10A. Which deals with the provision for the recognition of the fourth category of traditional leadership, principal traditional leadership, being not supported. And the response from the department is that the recognition of a principal traditional leader or community or council is not compulsory. However, the bill provides that where a principal traditional leader or a community in terms of their custom and customary law, such a leader and community may be recognized by the principal, by the premier of the province concerned, which means then that if that particular community together with the leadership concerned can demonstrate clearly that within that community there is a history and even custom and customary law allow for existence of this particular category, as I say, as it was demonstrated to us by the Free State, then such community and leadership should be allowed to exist or to be established. So what I'm saying here is that it is just not opening all the floodgates here. There must be convincing argument, clearly demonstrating that history of that particular community, together with custom and customary law, indeed provide for the recognition of this particular category. Thank you. Anybody against? None? Agreed. Thank you, sir. Northwest has already, it's also,
you're listening. that the question of the principal president, can you repeat again?
Thank you, Honourable Member. We were responding to a submission from the Eastern Cape that was not supporting the recognition of the fourth category of traditional leadership, known as the principal traditional leadership. And the response from the department says that the provision of this category is not compulsory. All that the bill is doing is to provide for this category in instances where a particular traditional community can demonstrate that in its history, as well as custom and customary law, there is a provision for this particular category of traditional leadership, the principal traditional leader. And as I'm saying, it was in this house where a traditional leader from Free State, in support of this provision, demonstrated that indeed there was history as well as custom and customary law that supported the creation of this. And we are saying as a government, we have here a option or a mechanism to prevent chance takers on this issue. That is not opening floodgates that any traditional leader can simply stand up and claim. There must be a demonstration in terms of its history. And this can be verified by investigators, researchers from the government, from the premier, appointed by the premier, to make sure that indeed the history of that particular traditional community and its leadership, as well as the custom and customary law, clearly allow for this particular category of traditional leadership before government can accede to that.
Thank you. And the procedure was that I should say, if there anybody against,
does this then imply in law that somebody would then make an application to somebody to say, here, I'm declared by my community as a principal traditional leader, and who is this somebody? Who then is going to go back and look into the history and all that? So it's not a commission matter, this one. But it's who? Is it the department? Is it the house? Or is it the royal? Is it the traditional council? So when is that properly captured here? That's the process of, you know, whilst we're creating this fourth leg, must be clear who does it, who processes it, whose duties and responsibilities to assess and effect this situation. And then perhaps, Chair, let's define properly, because I'm not sure the definition, does it speak to this optional, because this optional layer that is being created, does it talk to that this is just an innovation? It's an optional layer that is being created. Thanks, Chair.
I was actually pointing at the hand
there. No, the department has indicated that the state has demonstrated that history and customs allows for that fourth category. We support that. Can we get clarity in terms of what KZN was saying?
I don't know whether I captured exactly what was asked. My colleagues would add on. All I can say is a provision will be made in the provincial legislation for this category. It will be made very clear in a provincial legislation, because the application here is made provincially and not nationally. So the provincial legislation must cater for this, which will say in that the history, as we are seeing in the National Act, custom and customary law must demonstrate that indeed that particular applicant is indeed on firm grounds with respect to this. This is a democratic country. As is the case now, that any person can stand up and say, I'm a chief, but there are guidelines that demonstrate, that show then that in order for one to qualify to be a chief, these are. And so far, nobody has slipped through who is not a traditional leader by birth. And the same will apply to this category, that as far as we are concerned, nobody can just slip through here who does not qualify to be a principal traditional leader. That has not happened with respect to all the other categories. It has not happened. And we don't see the reason why it should happen in this particular category, that any person who simply wants to can slip through. Thank you. and Honorable Prime of Kwaisar. I think the department has responded. I would go back and say, is there anybody against? None. Admit.
Yes, sir. I've seen on page 4, then Northwest is maybe the same pronouncement which we have alluded that we have already responded to. Then on clause 26A9, subclause 9, the authority of paramount chiefs that did not qualify to be king and kingships, queenships, and queens over other traditional leaders needs to be clarified. And the response of the department says, the bill provides that paramountships and paramountships that did not qualify to be kingship or queenship, kings and queens, respectively, will be deemed to be queenships, kingships, or principal traditional leaders, principal traditional communities, subject to transitional arrangements. They will exercise authority over the same communities as before. So no amendment is recommended. Thank you. And
just want clarity so that I know what the committee agrees and does not agree on. I just want to know because the proposal from the provinces. They don't support, and the comment of the department says no amendment recommended. Which I'm not clear now. What is it that is not amended? Is the proposed amendment not recommended, and the committee agrees that there must be no amendment?
As we were doing this thing from the beginning, this no amendment or amendment speaks to the suggestions of the department. And this, I thought I'm consistent with that.
This is a proposed amendment which was not on the bill. It's a proposed amendment that is proposed during the committee. It's a proposed amendment which is proposed here in the committee by the department. It is not in the bill.
The department, I've seen. Chairperson, thank you. I think it's the same thing as Mr. Bogos referred to. There's additional proposals that were not part of the initial bill. And maybe that's the confusion now. That is there. But what is happening with the additional proposals is to say that you remember there were 12 kingships and queenships that were subjected to the investigations of the Travel Commission. Of those, 6 of them qualified to be recognized as kings and queens. 6 didn't qualify. So what the proposal is in this other document, the proposed amendments, is to say those that didn't qualify are deemed to be kingships and queenships if the incumbents into the positions are fully fledged leaders at that point. Those that are vacant will automatically become principal traditional leaders. And as soon as the current incumbents who are fully fledged passes on, that community will automatically become a principal traditional community. So those are the amendments in the bill. Yes,
it's very confusing because you see clause 26, if it is not on the bill, clause 26A9, now if it is not that, if that is a new proposal, where does this 26A9 come from?
Yes, but I thought we
earlier about Philip to say there are certain things that emerged when the briefing of the department came to us. Is it October, August? Is it not part of those things?
Yes, Chair, it is. For instance, this that what we're talking about now is what the minister, the deputy minister, came to brief the select committee about. And Mr. Mbongo's head already alluded to that.
The state law advisor is saying it is not, I don't have the bill in front of me. It's not there. But you see, on this document is saying clause 26A9. With other words, it refers to the bill. Now,
let me just clarify what I'm asking. I just need clarity from the committee. If it accepts the proposal made by the department, that is, the new proposal, which is not the bill, which they propose, it must be incorporated in the bill.
That is exactly what we are doing. Well,
I think during the briefing of the minister and the deputy minister, because the House of Traditional Leaders was in that meeting, we accepted that we were going to look at the entire, you know, including these extra matters that were brought in. And that is why they are part of these discussions. That is why, as provinces, we are also responding to those specific issues. I'm just clarifying that specific issue. And that's why we don't have problems in as far as that those areas are concerned, because they were part of the whole process.
Thank you. Is the state advisor satisfied?
I think in principle the committee agreed on the amendment. It's just that now, when the department says there are no amendments recommended, so there is a confusion somewhere, you know.
Chairperson, just to clarify, the confusion is that the statement of Northwest was to say they need a clarification on the issue. And we have tried in our comments to clarify, to say what happens to those paramounties that didn't qualify. We are saying they are deemed to be kingships until the incumbent passes on, then they become principal traditional leaders, and the communities that were originally subjected to those kings will still be subjected then to the principal traditional leader. So that is to clarify, so there is no amendment needed. The clarification is within the bill.
I think now it's in Cape.
No, I think, Chair, the, for instance, from the Eastern Cape, the problem is there, exactly. When they cease to exist, when they pass on, then they will be retained as principal. That is the bone of contention there.
Yes.
If they are declared as non-kings or their chiefdoms or whatever kingdoms are not recognized, therefore, according to the Eastern Cape traditional leaders, they must just cease to exist as such. There is no claim legitimate that must be created for this home of principal traditional leader unless that traditional community or kingship or queenship determines through its own processes.
What was earlier said that the provincial specific legislation will cater for this? Is it not catered?
Agree. I agree.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Page 5.
Okay. Just a slight question. Once we don't have a problem with the proposal, if, for example, the Eastern Cape, as they are saying, when they draft their own bill, will they not be compelled in terms of this one to do exactly what this bill is saying? Because if they do
something against this particular bill. There will be no progress. I think the stated law advisor must advise us here as to what might be the problem for the future in terms of the Eastern Cape if they don't agree with it. Because now those words also might have Mpumalanga to be saying the same thing. Because we need to check as to is that not going to cause problems for provinces. The West Gauteng does not have a problem. We're just checking and clarify again.
Yes, I'll try to put my own understanding for now. Can Department of Chairperson,
I agree we should be very clear about this issue. And first of all, we've tried to say that those traditional kingships that didn't qualify, paramounts didn't qualify to be kings, in terms of the proposal in the bill, they will be deemed to be kingships, queenships, until the incumbent passes on. And then automatically thereafter, they qualify to be principal traditional leaders. That's the position. But what we are also saying is, for the recognition of new principal traditional leaders, that's where a province will have a discretion to recognize new ones. But for the six that didn't qualify to be kingships and queenships, they will automatically become principal traditional leaderships. But there is an interim period until, for the current position, they will remain as kingships and queenships until somebody passes on. Then they will automatically become principals. Only apply to the six. And in the case of Mpumalanga, the one kingship that didn't make it to be a kingship will then, because there's a vacancy at the moment, that one will automatically become a principal traditional leadership. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, what is the definition of principal traditional leadership as it stands now?
The definition.
Yeah, Chairperson, the definition of a principal traditional leader means a traditional leader under whose authority or within whose area of jurisdiction senior traditional leaders exercise authority in accordance with customary law, be recognized as such in terms of Section 10A of this Act. That is how a principal traditional leader is defined.
There we are. No, I just want to correct the department. There is no vacancy. There's no vacancy as far as the kingship is concerned in Mpumalanga. Just that maybe the department has not issued out a certificate for that king. The king does exist. There's no vacuum at any point. When the king dies today, that very same day, a king has been appointed. You don't wait for years to come. There's no vacancy, and that must be corrected. And that understanding, if it does exist, it is wrong. It's going to create problems. There's no vacancy. Vacancy does not exist. And therefore, that can be automatically a principal leadership, even if you understand it as that. Thank you. With respect,
I think we know what the honourable member is saying.
I was saying that we don't want to, but few things must be said here. That the situation involving most of the kings, including Mpumalanga, is that those kings or paramount chiefs were established and recognized through the old legislation, which has since been repealed by a framework act, taking away from the provinces the appointment of kings. And during that period, when they were being investigated by the Chapel Commission, as required by law,
one king they passed away, leaving the province without any mechanism to fill that vacancy. But all members cannot talk about that. When that king, or Paramount, passed away, the province had no mechanism, legal mechanism, to fill that position. So whatever they did, the province had no legal mechanism to fill that position. That one is a fact. So we leave it at that. But this is just the fact that this, and this not only applies to that province.
No, it's not a fact. It's not a fact. When King Maisha died, there was a provision, but there were squabbles within the royal family. But then, even at that time, a successor was named by the royal family. And during that time, the Framework Act was in progress, was being discussed when Maisha died. The Tapu Commission as well was also going on. So
yeah.
Maybe you must note what we say and just take it forward.
Can I come in to say let's note and pack this matter between Mpumalanga and the department? It will be addressed in other forums or whatever that can be created to resolve the matter. For now, let's deal with the amendment or no amendment.
I hear your ruling and I abide by it. But we as legislators also have a duty to keep our country governable and in peace. We mustn't wait until the place is burning before we start acting. And I'm telling you that this dialogue is emblematic of a big dialogue going on in Mpumalanga, where we hear that kingships were established by legislation, whereas that same kingship, the people of that kingship claim that they've been kings for 700 and more years, while another king was appointed in terms of legislation in 1985. I'm not part of the squabble. I'm telling you that there's a problem and we can't hide behind old or new legislation or certificates or whatever. The problem must be solved, and if it means revisiting the Sapo Commission, that has to be done. And I really want to warn that we have a duty also to make the government department aware of the problems, Chair.
I think the chairperson will be requesting that the chair be allowed to chair according to the mandate of the day, and note that there is an issue between Mpumalanga and the department. We note it, but for now we don't have any content at this committee about it. It will be Mpumalanga and the department, Mpumalanga department. And, as I'm saying, let's note it, and then you create a mechanism of engagement for that to be resolved. So, Green, can we proceed?
On page 5, last part, section 1 of the Act, the Framework Act of 2003, clear definition of who constitutes a non-traditional leaders within traditional communities. And the response of the department is saying is traditional leader is defined in the especially in the Principal Act. Therefore, anybody who is not a traditional leader as defined that is king, queen, principal, senior traditional leader, senior traditional leader, and headman is regarded as a non-traditional leader. Those categories are defined in the Principal Act. In the Amendment Act, as read by my colleague, there is a definition of a senior and principal traditional leader. Other three categories are already defined in the Principal Act. And then a person who does not fit that definition is definitely a non-traditional leader.
Anybody again? Agreed?
Question. Is it also part and parcel of the bill, as the bill stands now. Then,
Thank you, sir. Clause 13, subclause 1C is replaced by clause 26A9, where we think, where SAG are saying premier to recognize an acting paramount chief while the commission is still investigating the position. The response from the department is that the latest proposed amendment to the bill deals with the paramount chiefs and paramountcies that did not qualify to be kings and queens, or kingships or queenships. One should also have a look at the comment we've made to the presentation of submission by Northwest in this instance. So we feel no amendment is required.
Anybody against? Are we agreed? Agreed.
Thank you, sir. Clause 1 from SALGA, definition, define sub-traditional council. The response from the department is proposed amendments to provide a definition of a sub-traditional council. No amendment is required.
Anybody against? Are we agreeing?
Thank you, sir.
Agreed.
Clause 14, designation of a non-traditional leader. Designation of non-traditional members of the traditional council must not be differentiated. And the response from the department is that there is no differentiation between members of council in terms of their roles and functions. Differentiation is only for purpose of paying sitting allowance because non-traditional leaders are not remunerated. Traditional leaders are remunerated. Store amendments is recommended.
Anybody against? Agreed.
Thank you, sir. There's no clause there. Retirement age of the Khosi, the senior traditional leader. Saying the bill does not deal with retirement of the host, that is, of traditional leaders. So no amendment.
Anybody against? Agreed.
No clause here, thank you, sir. Parity regarding benefits of senior traditional leader. Response from department is that the benefits of senior traditional leaders are the same throughout the country. No amendment.
Are we agreed?
Yes. Agreed. Thank you, sir. Clause 8, substitution of the word may for the word must in clause 8. And we're saying, already, after that, see comment 5 under free state.
Are we agreed?
Agreed. Clause 5 and clause 7 and 4 being the amendment, partnership between organized local government and traditional institutions. The response from the department is that the bill and the provincial acts provide for partnerships between municipalities and traditional councils, principal traditional councils, as well as kingship and queenship council. The National House of Traditional Leaders Bill also provides for the formation of cooperative relations and partnerships with government at national level. Clause 11, Clause 2G of National Health Act of Bill. It's no clear based on what these traditional institutions should partner with SALGA. So no amendment is recommended.
Agreed?
Thank you. Clause 17. Section 17 of Clause 10, threshold of 5 senior traditional leaders to establish a local house to be revived. That's at page 8. Response from the government is the bill provides that where there is more than one traditional council within a district, metro, a local house of traditional leaders must be established. Or if there is only one traditional council within a district or metro, such a traditional council performs the function of a local house. The minimum number of members to constitute a local house is 5. No amendments to comment.
Anybody again? Agreed.
On page 10, clause 4B of the amendment of campaign, no limit on the number of traditional sub-councils to be established. The response of the department is the establishment of a traditional sub-council must comply with the provisions of the proposed section, that is 4B. No amendments recommended.
Anybody again? Agreed.
Clause 4B, the amendment, government should not be required to support traditional sub-council in addition to traditional councils. The response is support should be provided to traditional sub-councils after consultation with the main traditional council, as this will enhance the functionality of the traditional council. Because this is part of the same community, just geographical division.
Anybody against? Agreed?
Thank you, sir. Page 11, clause 4B of amendment, threshold for traditional sub-councils to be determined. The proposed section 4B prescribes, that's the department response to say, proposed section 4B prescribes the maximum of 15 members. Propose that bill be amendment be amended to provide that in line with the traditional council, the number of members should be determined by a formula determined or created or reserved by the premier. So we agree that we should amend clause 4B to provide just for that, sir.
Anybody against? Agreed.
Thank you, sir. Mpumalanga, Tanzania. Clause 4, 3A, subclause 2C, 1, should be no ex-official member of traditional council. The response from the department is that in terms of custom and customary law, the Queen and Queen, Principal Traditional Leader and Senator are ex-official members. And so automatic chairs of these institutions. No amendment recommended.
Anybody against? Agreed.
Thank you. Plus 2B and 3D of the amendment of 8 and 10A, we already dealt with that. That is, Principal Treasurer Leader not supported. And again, clause 2B, 3B, clause 8, and 10A, bill must not recognize paramount chiefs. Again, we have already dealt with these two presentations, three comment two under Eastern Cape and three comment two under Northwest. We have already dealt with this. So, no amendment recommended. Clause 25.1, provision that the Commission make recommendations and develop a plan to assist traditional communities. If I recall, we said that issues referring to the Commission should be kept on hold until that clarifications have been made. So I will skip those.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Clause 3, subclause 2B and clause 3 of the amendment, and 3B and 4B. That's from Mpumalanga. Women to be recognized in all structures of traditional leadership institutions. And the responsible department is that provision is made for 1/3 of the members of the traditional institutions to be women. No amendment recommended.
Anybody against? Agreed.
Clause, thank you, sir. Kangala, clause 2A of the amendment. existence of the kingship, queenship before recognition. And Parliament says, proposed section 2A provides for just that stipulation, that there must be this history. So no amendment is recommended.
Agreed?
Thank you. No clause here from Gangala again. Every traditional community should have a kingship or queenship. Response from the department is, in terms of custom and customary law, the head of a traditional community is a senior traditional leader. And no amendment is recommended.
Agreed?
Agreed. Clause 2B, thank you, sir. 3B, a principal traditional leadership. That one has been dealt with already. Section 9, royal family should decide who the successor to a deceased king or queen should be. The response from the department is Section 9 of the Act provides that the royal family identifies the successor to be recognized by the government. That is already provided. No amendment to comment.
Agreed.
Thank you, sir. Clause 3A of the amendment. Membership of the king of kingship and kingship councils to be restricted to kings, queens, and senior traditional leaders only. The response from the department is that in terms of custom and customary law, membership of this institution should include headmen and the other knowledgeable individuals. No amendment recommended.
Agreed.
Thank you, sir. Clause 11. Clause 2G, provision for the intergovernmental relations between the houses and provincial and local governments. This one has to do with National House. We say in Clause 11, 2G of the House provides for this. Provincial legislation should provide for this issue as far as it relates to local and provincial houses. No amendment is recommended.
Agreed.
Thank you, sir. Section 1, Nkosana and Amakosana must be defined. The response is headmen and headwomen are defined as traditional leaders. No amendment recommended.
Agreed?
Clause 26A of the amendment, a subclause 8 and 9. Distinguish between king, queen, and paramount chief, and define paramount. We're saying, the government is saying, see comment 2 under Northwest, where this has already been done. No amendment recommended.
Agreed.
And you said, section 6, clause 6 and 8, provide for human and financial resources for outreach programs of traditional leaders. Response is clause 8 provides for this department. No amendment required.
Agreed.
And you said section 14 and 15 and clause 8, 10A in the amendment. Add to consent in writing to someone acting on his or her behalf. The response from the department is that the act deals with its wages. Acting and deputy traditional leaders in detail. Section 14, 15, and 16 of the Act deal with this. In terms of custom and customary law, the royal family identifies the incumbents of these positions. So no amendment is recommended.
Agreed.
Thank you, sir. Clause 13, subclause 1A, recognition of tribal authority until they are transformed. Response from the department is as clause 13, subclause 1A, provides for the recognition of tribal authorities as traditional authorities, and that a period of 7 years is prescribed for compliance with the Act. So no amendments are recommended.
Agreed?
Agreed. Thank you, sir. Clause 4B of the amendment. Establishment of traditional sub-councils in the area of other senior traditional leaders will lead to conflict. The response from the department is, a traditional sub-council can only be established within the area of jurisdiction of a particular traditional council, of which that sub-council is part. So we don't see how this can happen. So no amendment is required. Agreed? Agreed. Thank you. Clause 3A, the recognition of kings and queens should not be restricted to a particular province. And the response of the government is, being clause 3A amendment, that is, provides that the Premier recognizes a kingship or a queenship council and defines its area of jurisdiction within a province. And there is no way in that the Premier can define this in another province he is not presiding on. So no amendment is required. Agreed? Thank you. Clause 3B of the amendment, sub-clause 3, 4 and 4B, alignment of term of traditional council with that of municipal councils. Response is term of all traditional institutions are aligned with that of National House of Traditional Leaders. One must see the comments made 1 and 2 under House 10. No amendment. Agreed. Thank you. Clause 22A, amendment, disestablishment of current commission and establishment of new commission make, well, we said all issues regarding the commission will be on hold. No clause here. More relevant clause is clause 26, mechanism to review the decisions of the president. And we're saying the only competent authority to review the decision of the president will be a competent court of law. So amendment. Agreed? Thank you. Portfolio committee, I think this was discussed today when we did. Clause 26A, 9, commission's role and responsibilities relating to the paramount should be clarified. And I say this was the people hold. Section 13, page 16, provision for regent and for the review of the period of appointment. Family to identify the regent or acting person. Response from the department is, see section 13 of the Act, which deals with this matter. Family, the family identifies, the government recognizes, and the term is reviewed every 3 years for the acting person. No amendment is recommended. Agreed? Agreed. Can you say clause 7, clause 11 of the amendment provide for IGR between the traditional institutions and the three spheres of government, including interprovincial relations. The response from the department is clause 11 of the National House of Traditional Leaders Bill provides for this. Provincial legislation should provide for this issue as far as it relates local and provincial houses. See also clause 7 of the Framework Act, of the Framework Bill, which provides for the partnership between the district municipalities and kingship and queenship councils, and between local municipalities and traditional councils. So this is already provided for in our opinion, so no amendment is recommended. Agreed? Agreed. Clause 3A of the amendment, only traditional leaders should be members of the King's Queenship Council. And we've already discussed this, where we are saying, in terms of custom and customary law, the membership of Kingship Queenship Councils could include headmen, headwomen, and other knowledgeable individuals in order to enrich the process. So no amendments recommended. Agreed. Page 21, Western Cape, clause 4B of the amendment on page 6, line 32, after May, to insert within the province. And we're saying the comment will enhance understanding and legal certainty. And we agree with this amendment.
Agreed? Agreed. Limpopo. Clause 2A. Recognition of the kingship and queenship must be done with regard to traditions and customs, and tribal leaders must be consulted. We say in clause 2A of the amendment already provides for a clear consultation process, and that the identification and recognition must be done having regard to customs and customary law of that particular community. No amendment recommended.
Agreed?
Agreed. Clause 13 on page 23. Commission must deal with issues on an urgent basis to ensure that matters are put to rest.
The matter of commissions?
Pardon? The commission, yeah, we have that one we're skipping. Clause 2A, the amendment. Subclause 4, B and C, that B to C, from B to C. Traditional leadership should encourage gender equity in positions of traditional leadership. They're saying, the department is saying, the preamble of the Principal Act already provides for gender equality as one of the key principles that traditional leadership must adhere to. Also, clause 2A of the amendment, subclause 4, from B to C of the bill, also provides for this principle. No amendment recommended.
Agreed.
Page 24, thank you, sir. Section 6 and clause 7 of the bill must empower traditional leaders to participate in the issues of governance to speed up service delivery, including municipal level. And the responsible department, Section 6 of the Principal Act, provides for partnerships between traditional councils and municipalities. Also, Clause 7 of the bill provides for partnerships with kings, councils, and district municipalities. Section 76 and 81 of the Municipal Structures Act also provide for this partnership. The provincial houses of traditional leaders already work with provincial governments, and the National House works with National Government on developmental issues, etc. No amendment is recommended.
Agreed.
And I think that's the end of it. Thank you.
There we are. We have... the one that need to be engaged in the provinces is commission, and also that the department must look into the question of costing. Is it costing of financial implications? Yeah. So these are the two issues that need to be noted, and. What I would suggest that the department should draft a list of proposed amendments. I mean, the comments that we've been doing by the provinces, so that they are sent to provinces at least by the 27th, so that the provinces are able to link into that. Or is it too far, Louis?
No, Chair, except that let's go back to the procedure, which means then that in essence, from here, we're supposed to have a division for provinces, which means, and also I think that might impact on the proposed final mandate date, which is the other Tuesday. And I will also need to confirm, Chair, with the provinces then that they will have, in terms of the programs in the legislatures, that by next week they will have had, those who haven't had, that they'll have had the final, the sittings for the final mandate, and that the department will be ready with the division by then, so that from here we're all clear what next in terms of the process and procedure, Chair. Thanks.
Yeah, I think Honorable Rouge, you have taken what I was going to be saying. And I said, I was suggesting that all these comments that have been made, by Tuesday, they should be reaching all provinces to be assisting the meeting of the legislatures. That's what I was going to suggest, because on the set, we will, if this committee endorses, they are proposing that it should be the date of the final mandate. Honorable Rodis.
Chair, can't we agree that it should be by the end of the day on Monday? Because you see, in Gauteng on Tuesday, the committee will be sitting. And because they're also dealing with annual reports, it's a problem, so that they can deal with that situation.
So, to take advantage of that, if the department could work overnight, so that when Hamilton meet on Tuesday, he should have looked into the matters that we've been discussing. Will that be possible? I think we would urge you to really do that.
Thank you, Chair. There is a proposal by the Honorable Member that there must be a D-bill. That is not impossible, because there are issues that they're still going to go to the provinces, like the commission issues that are not being dealt with by the committee. So we cannot say send the proposed amendments to the printers as agreed amendments by this committee when there is that issue that is still outstanding. So the D bill is practically impossible.
What is that, the D bill?
That is the bill, the last final bill that incorporates the amendments that is approved by the committee. That is the D bill.
Or duration. All right.
I'm also not clear on the question of the commissions, because the process now would have been that we've got a summary of the responses. What we now need is a summary of the agreed amendments to go together with this document to the provinces. But there's this, and then they should come back with a final mandate. But now, how do we deal with this commission thing? That as the legal advisor has just said, we haven't finalized. Are we coming back to the committees with that one? Or what process are we going to follow there?
Can we put our minds and then assist each other on that one?
No, Chair, obviously, provinces must go back to their provinces and take a final mandate on that issue and come back. I mean, that is.
Sorry, Chair, through you. The workings of the NCOP is not the same as the NA. Before a province can take a final mandate, they need to find out what we have negotiated. We as provinces sitting here, representing our provinces, must give them a negotiated mandate that is agreed by this committee before a final mandate can be given by the province.
Mr. Davis?
Chair, whilst we understand what Member Watson is saying, from our position in Gauteng, we, in terms of the commission, we don't have problems. We just wanted some clarities in as far as, because in terms of us, as to whether, you know, how the commission is set up and everything else, in terms of what they was put forward to us, we don't have a problem. I'm just saying as Gauteng, we wanted to find out the implications and all those things. Those were the only issues. And we thought we can come with a final mandate from Gauteng. No, because I think in principle we agree. We just wanted to, if the department can go and do whatever they were supposed to, and send to Gauteng, for Gauteng to look at that,
we can finalize that situation in that particular meeting. It's not something big to us, you know. But if Mpumalanga says they just they need everything else before they can go back and deal with it, I don't know how we're going to deal with that situation.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I think concerning with Gauteng, we are also clear on the legal glitches and clarities were provided, and we are quite satisfied. And we are not going to renegotiate on this issue in the province. We are going to take the process forward. And I want to appeal to other provinces to deal with issues of content, and then we'll move forward.
I think, Chairperson, as KZN, we are also concurring with Eastern Cape and Gauteng. Here at this platform, we're just taking an advantage of this platform to ask clarity, but we did get enough clarity on the issue of the
content. The same as what KwaZulu Natal is saying, we're going to do the same thing.
Respect? Western Cape? Northwest? Northern Cape? agree, but we need to. I'll suggest as a committee that even prior to the same, come together. We'll just need time, I think, just get time prior to the event, just to consolidate ourselves in terms of that.
Okay, we are meeting on the 27th, so that's not a matter, so we can do it on the 27th.
Thank you very much. Just to go to item number conclusion. Conclusion. Just to formalize that the program has been changed to no longer take 27th. Is there?
I'm going to ask the committee if there, because we've got the three bills on both bills. So they can be distributed to the provinces that they still feel that they can go back and negotiate for final mandate. So we do we can hand them over to the committee secretary for the provinces to get copies.
You're welcome.
The list of all the amendments.
They were presented. They are all yes. On both bills. We have them now. Okay. Yes. The clarity is that she's offering a C, and we our understanding is that the legislature are waiting for a D, and I thought that what we then did as provinces we then expressed. In terms of the negotiating mandate and the issues that were outstanding, and I thought we concluded on that, and that we are now talking the D version. They must be ready with the D version, Chair, and that's all what we are saying now. For instance, the extent we will get the KZN legislature sitting for a final mandate, so the D bill must be must have been released, Chair.
A D version cannot be produced if there are still amendments that can come from the provinces.
My understanding of the proposal put forward and supported by a number of provinces is that we agree, and then we are actually understanding is the division can come out of that process so that we can go for final mandate.
Has been received from the provinces. the provinces.
Do you understand that, Honorable Louis?
Chess, are you asking me? No, that's a state law advisor, Chess, so I must comply. If she says it's a C, but the legislature has told us they want a D version, so maybe, I don't know, but we will comply with what she says, if that's what she says. But I thought that on that final, also what happens in the final mandate, it's we present what we got from the C version. That's what if we clarify the matter, and then they go and draft what after, because that's the last sitting of the committee, the final mandate session. It's the last sitting of the committee, then it's a debate on the 5th. So I don't know, there's a confusion between the D version and the C chair. But I was saying, if that's what technically it means, because my understanding is that what goes now, what she's going to give as a C version now, it's going to have these, whatever, whether the within, for instance, that was agreed upon in that clause, will be in that one, and those kind of things. So that it's technically you change the titles, you know, the front, the page, the date, if there's a date on the paper itself. Just and then it changes into D version, but she can clarify it further. But that's the understanding then that I was saying, then I'm complying if that's the case, that the C would have all of these things that we've agreed upon as we take it, and then that's what is going to be in a draft bill for the legislatures to endorse. And then when we come on the final mandate, we will have those in a draft bill form. Thanks, Chair.
Can I have a new voice?
Yes, just a point of clarity. The D version is the version of the bill that is required for the voting mandate,
yes,
which you are going to vote on in the House at the sitting of the NCFB. So you don't require that for the final mandate, but for the sitting of the House.
Clarified?
Except, Chair, that the problem is that because of all the delays that we've had, and I now speak from the Programming Committee, the decision was that the final mandates will be dealt with on the 3rd, but we'll actually debate it within 3 days, so the 3-day rule will have to be waived, which means that the deeper version will have to be done very, very quickly. No problem.
Are we agreeing with that? Some of us, like me, I'm learning now. You need to be honest. You need to be honest to say we are learning at that aspect. Yeah.
The same with me. I'm like Louis. I'm also Catholic, but not a communist. But there's clarity on the issue. Let's take the C now, and come and when we come back, we will have the D in the chamber. That's the process.
Can we adjourn to Tuesday? Is there food? There is food. Is it food not fresh?
No.
No. Wait. I think we are in committee of leaders. I now want to deal with my secretary. I said when things will go beyond 1 o'clock, we want food. Not those things. Isn't that the budget is for the committee? We need food, really. We don't want those things. We are politicians, we are parliamentarians. Officials should not determine what we eat. We need food. And if needs be, I'm not sure whether there's time. How did you do that?
That is what the